Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
You know, one of the nice things about watching Alabama football is you get that sideline view that the cameras show us, from television view. But Alabama having those numbers on the helmets really helps you to know what players you're looking at by looking at their headgear. Now, Timothy P. Brown joins us for this edition of the rise and fall of the helmet numbers for some of the other clubs and schools, what happened to their numbers. Tim's coming up in a moment to tell us all about it right after this.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history, and welcome to Tuesday. It's footballarchaeology.com, Timothy P. Brown Day, and Tim has another one of his great tidbits where he's going to reveal some interesting history that maybe we don't remember or just has been forgotten. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. This is a story about when somebody's number was up, right?
And somebody's number was up, indeed, and up at the highest point it can be worn, I would guess, because you titled this article not too long ago, The Rise and Fall of the Helmet Numbers, which is an interesting piece of history. So, yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah. So we've talked about this, in the past about the elements of football that were there for the fan, as opposed to the players on the field or the coaches. And so, the numbers that are on the backs, and then later on the fronts of jerseys, were there for the fans, not because the players wanted them or the coaches wanted them. They were actually opposed to them in many cases, but they were for the fans in the stands to be able to figure out who was who and be able to track, who was Red Grange or whomever, right? So, and then, similar changes, when they, those were for the fans in the stands. Then later when TV comes along, then they, one of the changes was made was to go to using white jerseys for the road team in football, and then the home team would wear dark jerseys. Now, that wasn't so much for the players in the stands or the fans in the stands, because they could tell a red jersey from a blue jersey. Mm-hmm. But on black and white television and small screens of the day, they couldn't tell the difference. So that was the rationale for going to the, road white and home, dark jerseys. The other thing that happened at about that same time, because the NFL passed the road jersey rule in 1954, the NCAA didn't adopt it until 1983, well after everybody was doing it.
Really?
Yeah, it's just one of those, just like they didn't require face masks till like 1993 or something like that. It was just one of those things. Everybody did it, and so they didn't even need a rule until they finally just put it in. But so back in like mid-50s, 53, 54, the National Photographers Association, which represented photographers, and then presumably, maybe they were involved with like TV cameramen and, folks like that. They basically requested schools and then conferences. They wanted them to put more numbers on uniforms so that it would be easier to identify who was who. So, anybody who's actually watching this on YouTube, my, background has, a team from, 1910 sort of era playing, and there's nobody's wearing jerseys or no one's wearing numbers. So it's hard to tell who's who. But even in the early 50s, just depending on how somebody was standing or, they're getting tackled, you might not see the front or the back of their jerseys well enough to see the number. And so they basically said, can you put more numbers on the jerseys? And so, or at least on the uniforms. So in 1950, in 1955, Georgia Tech is the first team that I've identified to have TV numbers on their uniforms. So what they did is they put numbers on the shoulder pads. So on both shoulder pads, they've got numbers. And then a week later, West Virginia opens their season, and they had numbers on their helmets. And so other teams put numbers on sleeves. But basically what happened is almost every conference required teams to put numbers on, ideally on their helmets, but they, would grandfather you. If you had numbers on your shoulder pads or on your sleeves, then you wouldn't have to put them on your helmets. And so from, say 56 is when the conferences started implementing those rules. From 56 till like the mid 60s, if you look at photographs from those years, almost everybody has numbers on the side of their helmets, college teams. And some of the pro teams too, the old San Diego Chargers, AFL at the time,
Oh,
but
yeah.
they've got numbers and the lightning bolt on their helmets. So that, that kind of thing was not an, was fairly
It
common.
was shocking with that lightning bolt.
Yes. That was actually pretty good.
Only two dads could appreciate that
Yes, so I got a charge out of it, but
joke.
so anyways, everybody starts putting these numbers on, and but at the in the late 40s, he had the Los Angeles Rams, they painted the horns on their helmets, and so there was a slow shift to logos, as rather than numbers on the helmets. And so if you look at look at college yearbooks or whatever during the 1960s, you start seeing more and more teams putting logos on their helmets. And another thing that happened in that era, there's Wisconsin did it, I know Vanderbilt did it, there's a couple of others, but in like the 1960 time frame, there were a number of teams that had logos, or they had numbers on the sides of their helmets, and then they would have like the letter of their school, like Wisconsin had a W, Vanderbilt had a V on the front of the helmet, which was a really dumb looking, it's a terrible look. I mean, obviously, there's some people who think it's cool, but I just think it's, kind of pig ugly. So, but so I for a long time I was like, why did they put, these things on the front of their helmet? Well, it's because they had numbers on the sides, right? So anyways, by the mid 60s, more and more teams are switching over to logos. And so, there's a few. So, Alabama, they actually put the numbers on the year before Bear got there, but then they kept them, and they've kept them all along, right? And so, for them, that's kind of a, you see that color and you see that the numbers on the side of the helmet, it's like, well, that's Bama, right?
Right. That's
So, it's
that part
really
of their aura.
shouldn't be identifiable, but because they're more or less, at least one of the few that does it, then it's tied to them.
Right.
So anyway, it's kind of an interesting deal.
Yeah. Now, go ahead. If you got another point, go
Yeah,
ahead.
I was just going to say, that it was the logos, but I also think, just TV screens got bigger, you also, and so fans at home could, were just able to see numbers better. on slightly bigger screens, and so they just kind of were like, oh, we just don't need that anymore.
Yeah, now he can count nose hairs to identify the players.
It's amazing.
So, yeah. Now, have you ever thought about this? And I don't know why I think about this, but especially in the like seems like the 1970s, a lot of the college and pros teams had like a probably like an inch and a half or 1 inch high number on the back of their helmets. If they had a stripe down the middle, it'd be a number, two digit number, 1 digit would be on each side of the stripe. The only thing I can think of is maybe for identifying the player if their helmets are on the sideline, they, hey, I'm 22, I'm gonna grab my helmet, because it really doesn't help anything for TV or during the play of the game or anything like that. But that's the only thing I can think of. Do you have any other thoughts on that?
Well, sometimes, there's shots from, if there's a pile or even like in a huddle, situation, you would see the numbers at the back of the helmet. So yeah, it's not uncommon. The Giants, would have the numbers on the front of their helmets, but same situation as you described on either side of the middle, or the center stripe. But and I actually meant to say this early on, but originally there were numbers like in the 30s. You see this fairly often. You see numbers on people's helmets, like on the back, but they don't correspond to their jersey number. So, they appear to just have been like an inventory number that like the equipment manager would paint on there so that he'd make sure that he got 27 back from, whoever wore that helmet. But then it also, I'm sure, part of the rationale is that it helps people identify their helmets. But I mean, I always knew which helmet was mine, and I think everybody else did. There's just something about whatever the scars were, or the your face mask. You kind of recognized your helmet.
Your nasty mouthpiece stuck in the
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to pick up his helmet because I don't want that near me. Yeah, very, very interesting. So again, another little aspect of football that sometimes we just overlook. We see Alabama play multiple times every year. It's they're a popular draw to have on our televisions, but you never really think about why those numbers are on there, and they really did it. And they're cool because it is cool watching TV, and most of the time we have that sideline view, and to know who number 17 is, he's that quarterback. Especially Alabama, I think when they were like swapping quarterbacks a couple years ago, like one series would be one quarterback. I think when Jalen Hurts was there, they did that. When Tua got hurt, and they were bringing them in and out, from each other. So at least you knew, who was taking the snap. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of
Well,
interesting.
and Bryant was, when he was coaching, he was, one of the guys. There weren't many teams that would do this, but if they played, say, Mississippi State, because their helmets at the time were, they also had a maroon helmet. When they played Mississippi State, Alabama would wear white helmets with the numbers on the side because he wanted the differentiation, especially for, pass receivers. So, I mean, really, the original reason for painting helmets was for to be able to identify pass receivers downfield. I mean, that happened in 1906, but back in the day, you'd see helmets were painted like the back of the helmet would be one color, the front of the helmet would be another, and it would be only the eligible receivers who had that. But
Interesting.
anyway, so there's some history behind Alabama's helmets. Even if they look kind of plain, they've done a little bit of their own thing.
Well, they look quite lively compared to Penn State's helmets, so we'll just
Yeah,
leave
well.
it. But they're iconic. Both helmets are iconic, and you can't picture that team wearing something else, with any colors or logos on it. So, yeah, very, very interesting.
Well, I'm going to challenge Penn State. I'm going to tell them I'm willing to donate $500 million to them if they put logos on their helmets, and we'll see what they say.
I'm sure you'd they'd put your footballarchaeology.com emblem on there if you wanted. You donated that much to them, I'm sure. But I don't think they're going to have to worry about that.
It's a pittance.
Very interesting, Tim. Really appreciate you sharing these little pieces of football history, these little nuggets, tidbits as you call them. And you have these on your website. You have almost 1,000 of them, I believe you said. Maybe you could tell the listeners how they can share and take in some of this football history.
Just go to the website footballarchaeology.com and or Google it and you'll find it. You can subscribe. You just submit your email. You can subscribe for free. That gives you access to about a third of the content. Paid subscription is $5 a month or $50 a year, and then that gives you access to everything that I publish. And I'll send you a copy of one of my books, and you get access to all the car archives and all that kind of stuff. So, that's kind of that's the deal. I also, post whenever, I publish a new story, I publish it on, or I post it on Threads and on Twitter. So if that works for you, then follow me on those.
Yeah, folks, it's a great deal. It's a bargain. And like Tim said, you subscribe, you even get a copy of one of his books, which is an excellent read too, to even get some more information. So highly recommend it. And highly recommend you check with us each Tuesday, because we get the benefit of having this gentleman join us to talk about some interesting football history. So Tim, we thank you for that, and we will talk to you again next Tuesday.
All right, thank you, sir, and look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.